So a lot of people hate the Masterpiece Society.
I can see why it wouldn't be a fan favorite.
And I was fully prepared. I had not seen it in years, and I really didn't remember much about it. This is not an episode that I revisit a lot. And so I sat down to watch it this morning, and I ended up enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I think that everyone else who doesn't like it is wrong and stupid.
No, I thought it was a very good episode, actually.
I think that it has everything that I want Star Trek to do. Is it the best episode ever? No. It certainly has some flabby parts, and it certainly has some problems, which we will talk about. But on the whole, I think it's certainly a damn sight better than what we talked about last week.
Yeah. It's the kind of episode that I like Next Generation when it starts a story, it gets to a point, and then it just kind of left fields something that's completely logical, something that the implications have been there the entire time, but aren't very expected. I mean, this episode thought about its own story in a much more sophisticated way than it initially seems to have.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's the kind of episode one of my notes is that it continued long past where I thought it would. Like, I figured they'd kind of, you know, oh, I'm going to go on the Enterprise. Okay, well, we'll, you know, get you on the stars in the end. And that's, you know, because that's where these episodes usually end.
Mm-hmm.
And they take it to a much more interesting place. And I liked that a lot about it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I respect that a lot. And I think, you know, you've basically got two endings that I think the show could have had. And, of course, the episode could have been entirely about them trying to save the planet. And that's pretty much over by minute 30.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, well, what's going to happen in the last 15 minutes? And as it turns out, you're going to have this whole thing about the society and people start wanting to leave. And again, you're right. The second logical ending point would be, okay, well, they're going to leave. And instead, what you get is an actual conversation about what it means to have these people leave.
Yeah.
And the morality of having these people leave. And is it actually right or not for them to leave?
I mean, in the case of, like, think of that first contact. At the end of the episode, the scientist decides to leave. The government will tell its people whatever it wants to about why she's not there anymore. She could just, you know, even decide to be reclusive. You know, they could, you know, fake a heart attack. You know, they could do one of a dozen things and the world will turn. But this is half of the colony moving. This is not
It wasn't half of the colony.
I'm being exaggerating. This is a good deal of the colony moving. This is something that will not be able to be as ignored. And, you know, the point that they make is, well, yes, you can give, you know, it is right to give the choice to people. That choice is going to remove the quality of life for people who are not making that choice. So in a way, allowing one, you can either one can leave and disperse, or everyone has to stay.
Well,
you can't have it both ways in this case. This is a case where you can't have as easy of a middle ground.
I think even talking about it in terms of exaggerating it by saying half the colony is leaving, I think is doing a disservice to exactly how strong the episode is. Because, of course, it's only like half a dozen people. Oh, no, it's like, what, 25 people leave, something like that?
Who end up leaving,
Who end up leaving out of, you know, a colony of thousands. That's a very small percentage of people that are leaving. And so,
okay,
in a normal colony, that would not affect things at all. And what I think is why I don't want you to downplay that is because that's what makes the episode interesting. Is this is really an episode about individual rights versus the collective. And this is a society which has decided that they are going to genetically engineer every single person that's born into this colony to fulfill a prescribed role. It's almost like it's a less ominous version of the Borg in a way.
Okay.
And, you know, to me that indicates that there's a much more interesting moral conundrum here than because we're going to talk about conundrum later. There's a much more interesting moral conundrum here than is initially presented, because what is really on the one hand, okay, what is the issue with these people leaving? I think people on the Enterprise don't necessarily understand, but this really means great social discord for them.
Yeah.
And so, but is it, you know, is it moral to have individual people? Because, you know, these are not Borg. I mean, these aren't individual people with individual thoughts and feelings and beliefs. So, and I think that the loss of 26 Borg to a cube would be a lot less disastrous than the loss of these 26 people to this colony.
Sure, sure.
Because so where does that, you know,
well, they're not interchangeable.
Them?
They are all in their way special.
Right. So it's kind of one of those things where you look at it and you say, okay, well, should Picard have let these people leave? I mean, is the conception of individual rights that the Federation espouses appropriate here? You know, even though they are human. I don't know.
Yeah, is giving them the concept of individual rights violating the Prime Directive itself? Like, that alone, you know, the episode seems to say, you know, their very presence here corrupted the colony in a way.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a good meaty Prime Directive episode in a while, probably since First Contact, but what I like about it is that it doesn't present the choices involved as inevitable, and it doesn't present them as evil, right? And it doesn't present this. I think it would have been really easy to portray this colony as some sort of Orwellian nightmare.
Yeah, there's a slight bit of sinisterness at first, and you know, you think that this, you know, the second in command is all like, well, this is a very bad idea. Like, you think he's going to be, you know, a problem, you know, like all. But at the end, that just turns out to be, it's almost red herrings. Like, once they get to know the colony, they actually they begin to understand it. And then they realize, no, this isn't creepy. This isn't a dystopia. This is just, it's a weird way of living. It's a very different way of living, but it's not a way of living that's a problem. There is no evil alien spore making everyone do something. People are not feeling like they are, you know, constrained into doing things they're miserable doing. You know, people are not hurting each other. You know, no one's being killed for disobeying the state. You know, none of that's happening here.
Yeah, and so what I think what is interesting about that too is that the second in command, I forget his name, but he initially says, oh, well, this is a really bad idea. We shouldn't let these people come. And, you know, the first in command is like, oh, you know, well, we're going to have to let them, you know, like, we'll die otherwise. And at the end of the day, I think the episode is really smart to, towards the end of the episode, have that conversation revisited and have the first in command say, you know what, you were right about this. And I think that that is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it portrays them as, I think, a little bit inflexible, but not inflexible enough to allow the society to live or die, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it does hit that line between inflexible and principled, you know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think it may make it clear that the second in command he really believes this, and he genuinely loves and wants this colony to work, and he thinks that, you know, his genuine belief is that this is the best way for it.
I think the other thing about it that's kind of intriguing as well is the idea of, you know, how many people could leave this society without it falling apart? You know, is it five? Is it? I mean, because they do mention, okay, well, what if people die? You know, people get sick. People, you know, get hit by cars. I mean, whatever. But, you know, there's accidental death involved here.
Yeah.
And so they say, well, you know, we're genetically engineered and we, you know, abort people that are sick.
Yeah, you assume that they don't get sickness very often, you know.
It's a closed society. So, of course, yeah, okay, they don't get a lot of sickness. It's kind of a biosphere kind of thing. So, all right, that's fine. But, you know, things happen and someone's lifting something heavy and it falls on them and they get killed. I mean, these things happen, mm-hmm. right? And so that seems to have there's a tiny bit of redundancy built into the society, but not enough, right? And so that's the other thing that I think is really sort of hard to reconcile with this, is that you have essentially a closed society which is genetically engineered for each person to fulfill one prescribed role, and not only that, but to be happy about it.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean exactly? You know, because,
yeah, I mean, the questions that this is bringing up are less that, you know, people leaving, and more, let's say the scientist leaves for a while, you know, learns about some inventions in space and goes back to the planet. You know, what if she's had a kid and she decides to bring it, you know, wants to raise it on her home planet, you know? Like, this is going to be – these are the kind of moral issues that they're going to be dealing with, you know, with these people leaving. You know, as, you know, Troy herself says, like, you know, if you and I got together, we would possibly be introducing half-betazoid DNA into the system, you know? That's not going to be all right, you know? And, you know, my other question is, why don't they have sperm banks?
Where are you going with that?
Like, if they want to, if their main reason for not letting these people leave is because of the DNA, well, there is a really easy way of leaving some of the DNA behind.
Well, I thought that the implication was not so much that the DNA was going, but that the people were going, and that sort of prescribed very important roles.
So, in other words, the lead, nobody else is going to be able to step up and be the construction worker if a construction worker leaves.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So I think that that was kind of the implication there. And of course, the female character in the episode is one of their most brilliant scientists. And so once she leaves, what's going to happen? I mean, these are, this isn't like, I'm not saying that that construction workers
or
garbage men are not important, but this is someone who obviously has a great deal of import to their society that is leaving.
And we'll put it this way. The person who has some of the greatest conflicts is the leader. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that that is kind of the real meat of the episode as well, is what does it mean for these people to even want to leave? Like, why do they want to leave? And at the end of the day, they could have left them alone. Picard seems to think, you've got that scene at the end of the episode where Picard is talking to Riker, and Riker is saying, well, the Prime Directive doesn't apply here because these are humans, and Picard doesn't agree with that.
Yeah.
And, we could talk about that. I don't know how you feel about that, but what is the solution here? Because this is a group of people that left human society, left Earth 200 years ago. They were not happy on Earth. They were not happy in the larger society. And so they decided to close themselves off. And, one of the things that I think this episode really brings to the forefront is the idea of a closed society and what that means to be a closed society.
Yeah.
It really puts you in danger. Is your society worth dying over? If the Federation had not come, and if the Enterprise had not come, and if they had not answered their hail, they would all be dead. And so is that worth it?
Yeah. I like that the episode doesn't really have an answer to that.
No, the episode doesn't really have an answer to it. But I think more importantly, I don't know that we're supposed to have an answer.
Yeah, exactly. It is a huge question, and it is the kind of the ironic thing. It's the kind of question that people are going to have individual answers to.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But I think,
but it's also the thing where they also don't have an answer to. Again, they ask a couple times point blank, well, if we hadn't, gotten the Federation call, we would die anyway, to which the ultimate answer that Picard says is, well, we may have destroyed the society as it is. Like, we don't know how it's going to be in 5 years,
Right. And I think the really interesting thing, though, about that is there's an idea that this society is not changing and is not growing in any way. I mean, population is probably growing, but slowly, but it's not growing in the sense of changing or learning or developing any sort of new ideas.
Well, and that's interesting because, let's go to the original series. Now, I think it was interesting because when we're talking about Matter of Time, I was saying, I could see that much more being a original series episode.
Yeah.
This is very much a Next Generation episode, because if Kirk had been on this planet, he would say, well, this is ridiculous, and, we're not going to do this, and everybody who wants to come, we're going to take you into the Federation, and he would make a big speech and convince everybody.
Right.
Here, Picard is making it clear that, but the original series interpretation of the Prime Directive. Think about the Apple. It's a functioning society. It's a society that works, but Kirk sees that and he says the society is not changing. It's stagnant.
Right.
And a stagnant society doesn't have, it's okay to violate the Prime Directive to bring a stagnant society out of that stasis. And so I guess the question is, do we consider this to be a stagnant society or not?
Well,
it's an old interpretation of the Prime Directive, but it's given that it's the closest one that applies, because as Riker says, warp is not unknown to them. They know there's a galactic community. They are human. They know that these things, they've chosen to cut themselves off from all of this, but they know that that all exists.
Yeah, and I think I don't remember exactly what we thought of the Apple. I don't think either of us liked it that much. I don't remember being that interesting of an episode.
No.
But I would hesitate to use Kirk's interpretation of the Prime Directive as any sort of indication as to how they should act in this one.
No.
Because it's a hard question. we can talk in episode terms, but I think if you kind of broaden this conversation and think about it in terms of what is best for these people,
yeah,
right? And you know, is it better to survive and destroy everything that you are, or is it better to die knowing that you died with your beliefs intact?
And here's the other question: are those beliefs, should those beliefs be set in stone, or can they themselves, you know, evolve? In other words, you know, it might just be okay that, yes, we believe this for the first 200 years of our existence, and, you know, we became a very strong colony, but there were some limitations to that, and we decided to move on from, like, that could be a perfectly viable narrative for this colony, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, maybe they did need to, you know, maybe that was their childhood phase, and now they're going into their adulthood phase, and they need to explore the galaxy again.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I think that that indicates to me that, you know, societies do grow and change over time. And so, yeah, maybe this was the colony going from childhood to adolescence or whatever, right? And so, you know, and I think the other interesting thing that you can really take away from that as well is think about who wants to leave and were they content? You know, I mean, like, that's kind of the question that's never really, you know, even brought up by the episode. Ooh, yeah. But I would kind of think that they weren't.
Well, I think the scientist's reason is very interesting. I mean, she says, you know, I was brought up to be the best scientific mind, you know, on the planet. And she is, you know, we can assume that she knows everything science related, you know. And then, as she says, you know, I've been here 3 days and I've seen so much stuff that I don't know. You know, she has the technologies of, you know, 200 years plus different alien cultures that weren't even just thought of at the time that, you know, they last, you know, had contact with them. And so she's realizing that she's maybe, you know, she's a small fish in a small pond right now, you know?
Right.
She is curious about I mean, because let's face it, the greatest scientist of her generation would have a really damn strong curiosity about everything. I mean, she is going to, she wants to see everything else because she, and she will, here's the thing, she can never be happy back on her planet, you know, with this closed society because she knows that she's kind of a fake in a way.
Well, and it's also, I mean, I think if you take that analogy a little bit further, I think as well, you could say that, you know, children grow up and want to leave home. And so if this society is really as structured and as sort of genetically prescribed as they say it is, then there would be elements in the society. There would be people in the society that you would not want, they would not want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, they would want to leave, or they would want to try and expand things. You know what I mean? I think let's, you know, a little thought experiment would be, okay, well, what if this stellar core fragment wasn't going to impact the colony and everything was fine and the episode never happened? You know, what would this colony look like in another 1,000 years? I don't necessarily think that it would look exactly the same, and you may even have a group of people that decided to leave anyway.
That's it. Do you think she doesn't want to invent space travel? Or if not her, you think, you know, the next great scientist or the next great scientist won't want to invent a rocket engine? I mean, somebody is going to eventually want to look in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also, you know, I think the fact of the matter is, you know, she is willing to lie about toxic radiation leaking into the colony. She's willing to destroy the entire colony in effect to want to leave. I mean, that indicates to me that there is some desperation there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know what that means, but, you know, to me it seems like these people have a right to live how they want to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm uncomfortable with the idea that the good of society is enough to compel people to live in a certain way that they don't necessarily want to live.
I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, it's, I like that this is a very, again, it's a much more meaty episode than last week, I will say. And again, the episode doesn't have any answers for any of these questions, and which is good because there are no answers to any of these questions. I mean, the individual versus state liberties is something people have been arguing for thousands of years,
right?
And always come up with a different answer. But, you know, I think it's one of those episodes that's important to ask the questions.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's,
you know,
what...
This is good. As you said, this is everything you think of Star Trek and good sci-fi in general, you know, has this, here's a weird alien culture, but this is what it says about aspects of our culture.
Right, right. Yeah, I think so.
The only thing, the main thing I didn't like about this episode, and I can't even say I disliked it that much, but all the stuff with Geordi and his visor was so on the nose.
Okay, I thought you were going to go a different direction.
Really?
I thought you were going to talk about Troy and her man.
Oh, it's just that was there and that was all right. It was 1992.
He freaks me out because he looks a little bit like the guy from The Empath, I think. Was it The Empath or was it The Loss? The really creepy guy who was in Betazoid, The Price. It was The Price.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of looked like that, and I was like a little freaked out. And Troy, they obviously think Troy has a type, and it was just very, I don't know. Like, that was just Troy falling in love and just not, I don't.
I mean,
yeah.
Somebody needed to fall in love with somebody from the
colony.
And, you know, Crusher has done that so many times already, so.
It's not a perfect episode.
No, I can't say it's a perfect episode.
There's a lot of good stuff in it, but the Troy stuff was ill-conceived at best, I will say. Yeah, and I think the Geordi stuff, too, is, yeah, it's a little on the nose.
But at the same time, it's Star Trek has the ability to be on the nose sometimes.
Well, I think sometimes you have to be on the nose. You know, I think I understand the criticism of that Star Trek is on the nose sometimes, or Star Trek is a little obvious sometimes. But I think that that's fine. You know, sometimes you just have to tell people the way it is.
This is a perfectly fine opportunity for a... You know something, I'm disabled and I did something really well. Like,
right.
Fuck you. You know, that was good.
And the idea that, you know, I think a lot of people dislike the episode because of Troy and Connor and that relationship. And, you know, Troy's relationships never really seem real or consensual. Although this one is a little better than most. But I think also people dislike the episode because there's some sort of weird anti-abortion thing in it that they interpret it as, and I think that that's wrong. I don't think that there's any sort of anti-abortion or anti-choice sentiment in this episode at all.
I thought the episode was a little like pro-aborting babies with birth defects.
Why would you think that?
Well, because, you know, they don't, they say, like, you know, people who don't, you know, everything's engineered, you know, we abort babies that are not, you know.
Well, but I mean, that's what the Geordi scene was about. I mean, that was having her eyes open.
Oh, okay. I get that.
And saying, maybe it's not a good thing that we're aborting babies, you know, because they're going to be blind or have Down syndrome or whatever, you know.
I mean, it implies a continuum, you know. She is talking about, you know, people who have black hair as opposed to blonde hair type of issues, one assumes, as well as, you know, this is a Gattaca society, but. You know, I don't think the episode is saying, like, I don't know, just...
I didn't get the impression that they were aborting babies because they didn't fit in with the, you know...
No, you're right. I mean,
down a blonde, so this baby is going to be black-haired, so we need to kill it and get a blonde. Like, I didn't think it was that kind of society. I mean, they don't look alike and they don't
dress
alike.
It clear that there are different... races involved, at least.
Yeah, and I think it's just one of those, you know, one of those episodes. It's another idea in the episode that they don't really have, they introduce, but they don't really have enough time to really do much with. And so maybe it would have been better to leave it out. I don't know. But, you know, I think it allows, you know, because I don't think they have enough time to really deal with the idea that, you know, Geordi is a wonderful person and a great engineer, and if he was in this society, they would have killed him. And she gives this weird answer about how the society doesn't think that people should have to live being blind or have disabilities, which is a little creepy. But at the same time, this is the scene. This is the character motivation for her to start to have her eyes open.
Yeah, and I did get the chance in the sense in that dialogue that she never really had thought about it, really, because again, it's one of those unquestioned bits of your society you don't really deal with, and kind of you hear her as she's actually, you know, for the first time really having to meet somebody who is blind and articulate and realize, like, it's not an existence of suffering. Like, again, I think as she's saying it, she's realizing how terrible it sounds.
Well, because this is a society that's never had to deal with that, you know. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, every society and has its own sort of unexamined assumptions about things. You know, we have our own unexamined assumptions about things, you know, and so, you know, we think we live in a you know, free meritocracy, and we don't. I mean, it's a lie. But, you know, so there are a lot of things that people think that aren't necessarily true. And so that's, I think, where that was trying to go. I don't know that it was necessarily all that successful, and it does introduce some problematic elements to the episode that perhaps otherwise would not be there. But at the same time, I think it is important that it's there.
Okay.
I'm not sure how much else there is to say. I think that, you know, on the whole, this is a kind of a return to, you know, message or, you know, Star Trek that I kind of miss in a way.
It was an episode that I liked watching, and it made me think about some stuff I hadn't thought about.
Yeah, yeah. So I liked it quite a bit. And, you know, this is something that The Next Generation has sort of gotten away from doing. It hasn't done it in a while, and I think it does it again in a couple weeks, which is kind of nice. So we'll get another episode like this.
Good.
Not exactly like this, because they didn't, you know, they didn't film this script twice with
the Masterpiece
actors.
Society 2.
They did it a second time, but instead of people, the colony was dogs.
Aww.
It was adorable. It was the Master Dog Society.
No.
I'll give this one 7.
I was going to give it 7.
All right. Well, let's move on to Conundrum.
So people listened to Worf for about 30 seconds this episode.
That was nice for him, wasn't
it? It was good. He got to actually prioritize weapons.
That was kind of weird.
I liked this episode
lot. It's good. I like it. It's you know, high concept science fiction, and it's you know, it's good. We're done. All right.
Okay.
No, I think that it's kind of hard to talk about because it's very plot dependent.
Yeah.
And but the plot is interesting and the plot works, and I think, you know, there are some weird problems I have with it, but on the whole, I think it works very well. But I do want to ask you, why do you think Ro and Riker slept with each other?
Because they obviously are the same person.
Yeah.
That made a lot of sense to me, actually.
No, I think it makes sense. And I think, you know, it's nice that the episode went out of its way at the very beginning to remind us that Riker and Ro don't get along. Because they are the kind of people that would fuck because they hate each other.
Yeah, it's just the kind of thing where they have a... They needed to get that out of the system. You know, they are the kind of people who they just needed to get just drunk and screw and just get it over with. And this was the way they did that.
But I guess the question is, and this is kind of the question of the entire episode, is when you lose all your long-term memories, are you the same person?
And I think the episode believes that there is an element of that.
Yeah, I think so.
Especially the very end scene, you know, Troy comes out, you know, Troy does make it, you know, hedge a little bit by just saying, you know, well, it's psychologically valid. But, you know, I think she makes it clear that, you know, not every action is your true self, you know, and
right.
Some may be made out of confusion or whatever. But at the same time, I think they are all dealing with the fact that, you know, Ro and Riker had a moment. If Ro and Riker were to meet without any of the baggage, because you remember, I mean, in her first episode, you know, Riker hates her because of what she did or did not do. And, you know, if he'd gone on Risa and met her and that was, you know, it, would they have had a relationship? I mean, she is the kind of woman that he usually goes for.
Which is a woman. So yes, that is true.
No, but I mean, you know, she is very, you know, again, she's competent, she knows what she's doing, she's very forceful, very determined, very, you know, she's impulsive, you know, maybe she makes bad decisions, but, you know, doesn't have the benefit of experience quite yet, but, you know, which is all things you can say about him.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because I think that in its own way this episode sets itself up to be something else than it ends up being.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like that the episode doesn't go in the obvious direction that it could have gone.
They figure out within 15 minutes who everybody is, and they, you know, get their roles figured out.
Yeah, I think it would have been extremely tedious to watch 45 minutes of these people bumbling around. I mean, Data's the bartender and Picard is sitting at the helm. Like, that would have been really tiresome. So I like that they figured that out pretty quickly. Although whether or not that was designed by the evil alien is, you know, debatable.
Wow.
But I think that there's a kernel to the episode, which is basically that these are people that have individual skills and absent memories will still use them. But at the same time, it doesn't go so far as to say that they would all exactly know what they should be doing, because of course, before they find the personnel records,
yeah,
you know, Worf thinks he's in charge and Picard is just quietly going around getting shit done because that's who Picard is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
You know, Data finds himself, you know, sitting behind the bar, so he is making, you know, drinks for people, you know, and Dr. Crusher, you know, finds herself the easiest because she has, you know, something in her hand, you know, and just knows how to use that, but...
And she's got that rocking lab coat.
She's, yeah, I would say it's very obvious, you know, she's the most obvious person there, but, you know, yeah, I think it's interesting the degree to which these characters are their roles and to which, you know, what parts of the characters are their positions on the Enterprise and what parts get outside of that. And this, we begin to see a little of both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think that, I also think that it's nice that once everything is revealed, no one really fights against it.
Well, I think it says a lot about Worf and Picard that, you know, the second they find out, you know, once they found out, Worf, you know, turns around ashamed for a couple minutes and then he immediately apologizes and, you know, Picard doesn't even think twice of it, you know, and that's who they both are. You know, Worf knows that he's acted disgracefully, you know, in a way he's overstepped where he is, but Picard is not going to hold a grudge about that. He doesn't necessarily disagree that, you know, it's not like Worf did a bad job.
No, he didn't. And I think that, you know, I think one of the interesting questions that the episode kind of raises and doesn't answer, because I don't think it could answer it. And
yeah,
I think that it's good that it doesn't try to answer it, is, you know, how much of personality is ingrained and how much of it is based on experiences. And so, you know, what this episode seems to indicate is that at least part of your personality is ingrained, which I think is fairly obvious,
yeah,
and known at this point. You know, babies have, you know, different, yeah, personalities, but it is shaped by experience and it is shaped by your memories, and it,
yeah,
is, you know, every interaction you have with a person is one more data point. The next time you have an interaction with that person, you're going to base that on all of the interactions you've had in the past. And so, like, there is that idea that, you know, I think you may have even said this on the show before, that, or maybe this is a conversation we've had off mic, I have no idea at this point, but that you kind of have a different self with each one of the people,
yeah, yeah,
that you know in your life. And so there's a self at work and there's a self with your friend, you know, Mike, and there's a sense with your, you know, friend Shauna, and, you know, there's a sense of yourself with your mother, and there's a sense you have with the guy at the corner, like,
yeah,
you know. And so there's different people at all times, and what this episode seems to be saying is that they all are kind of the same, even if they're not the same.
I mean, they do and they don't. Again, I mean, I think Ensign Ro is the biggest difference between her amnesia self and her normal self, you know?
Right.
We see her in her first scene and she's very, you know, body language, she's very close. She speaks very quickly. She's very, you know, antagonistic and argumentative. Here, she's a bit more flirty. She's a bit more, you know, friendly and approachable, and in a lot of, you know, she is no less determined, no less competent. You know, part of that is because she is around Riker and she,
right,
does, you know, feel that attraction to him, and, you,
right,
know, both of them are acting a lot flirtier towards each other. But at the same time, she is, you know, let's think about who Ro is. Ro is constantly having to prove herself. And so, yes, she is not going to be the friendliest person in general. She's, you know, normally she never is. She isn't going to be very approachable because normally most of the people who are approaching her aren't approaching her for the nicest reasons. So I think without that baggage, I think in this case we are seeing a little more of her true self, if such a thing exists.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you're focusing a lot on Ensign Ro, because, of course, I think, you know, we know at this point, I mean, we've been with these characters for 4.5 years, and so we understand, I think, them to a large degree, and we understand,
yeah,
how they interact with each other. I mean, I think to a large extent, Disaster was about getting them out of their comfort zone,
yeah,
and giving them different people to interact with that they may not interact with all the time. And that episode worked because we knew how they would act with everybody else.
Yeah. And again, the first few minutes of this episode do kind of that thing where they have some odd pairings, you know, Data and Troy, you know, and all that, but...
And so, but what I like about it is that it you know, and why I think you're focusing on Ensign Ro is that once they get out of that and once they realize who everybody is, and of course Riker is the only one who's kind of shunted off to a different position than he normally is in.
Yeah.
Because you've got this guy Kyle, which is not actually a person. And Ro is the one that is kind of she's kind of the unexpected element here because she is the newest character and we've seen her before. I don't think it would work if she was just a random guest star, you know, but she's mixing it up with everybody in the regular cast. And I think that that's interesting because it says that the show kind of puts her on that level.
Yeah.
And also that she adds sort of a level of unexpectedness to the entire proceedings, which I appreciated.
And we've seen the other characters relaxed in various moments. We haven't seen her relaxed yet. You know, we haven't really seen what Ro does off duty.
Yeah, in a weird way. I mean, this is kind of the episode where we learn what she's like off duty, even though it's not really her because, of course, she doesn't have any of her memories. But you know, if you go with Troy's interpretation of, well, you act how you would act anyway, necessarily, maybe you'll do things you would want to do otherwise or whatever. These are kind of how she wants to be. You know, she's very tightly wound. You know, she's a very sort of controlled person, as you said. And so
without that, she is the kind of person who probably desperately wants to relax and desperately just wants to, you know, enjoy and relax and have a fun time with the hot chips, you know, officer, you know, rather than. But she can't do that normally.
Right, right. And I, you know, let's talk about Ensign Kyle, whatever his name is. Kyle McDreamy, let's call him.
You think he's dreamy?
Not really, but
you
know.
He looked a little potato-like.
He's also the unexpected sort of element in this episode that we don't know what to deal with. And I kind of like it because we sort of know what's going on, but we sort of don't know what's going on at the same time. And it's a weird episode where episodes like this usually work in one of two ways.
Yeah.
Either the audience knows exactly what's going on and none of the characters do, or the audience knows no more and no less than the characters. And this episode is kind of skirting both ways.
Funny because the second he started to have, like, the second he had a third line was the second I got really suspicious of him because, you know.
Also, if you watch closely, he wasn't there until the probe happened.
See, I didn't see that
moment,
actually. But, you know, I know plenty of I've seen enough episodes of the show to know that, you know, they'll give a line or two of just like, you know, oh, we see a ship coming off, you know, like the type of stuff to just random people. But to have him prominently in this episode and not to be focusing on him personally is suspicious, I guess. Like, it was, I don't know, but so, you know, I kind of did figure it was something along these, you know, the lines of what the main plot was, which didn't make it any less interesting to watch, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that the plot itself is really the focus here. You know, I mean, certainly it's interesting and it's entertaining to watch, but, you know, really what
it's a device,
It's a device to really get at a different set of characters than we normally interact with. And also, finally, too, I think, you know, we talked a lot in Unification about you know, this crew is just the best and they're able to win the day in all kinds of terrible situations because they are just that much better than all of their opponents. And this is another indication of that, even when they're not their own people,
you know,
even when they're sort of adrift and lost and they don't know what they're doing. There's still a core of who they are and who Picard is and who Geordi is and all of these people that indicates that this is not right. This doesn't feel right. Troy doesn't think it feels right.
Yeah.
And so they all sort of go with that. I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, Guinan's not on
the ship in this
episode, because I think if you had had Guinan in the episode would be over a lot more quickly than it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I like the fact that you know that it's wrong. I mean, obviously, this is not the mission that the Enterprise is on.
Yeah, they say we've been at war with the whatever, that was what? That's when the plot became very complex, because we've never heard that before.
Right. And so you kind of get the sense that, okay, yeah, what something's going on with this Kyle guy.
Yeah.
Something is going on with the ship. We don't really know what, but we know that we know enough that we know that this is not the right situation, but we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I like it because there's a certain level of ambiguity to the episode, which, you know, I think it was designed to make the audience feel a little off kilter.
Yeah.
And a little confused and a little lost.
Yeah, because there's no one to even, you know, even Troy doesn't believe that this war should happen and stuff, but she doesn't question any of it. You know, it's not like she says, that doesn't sound right. You know, no, she... This is a species that we're at war with and we have been at war with for a long time. Okay. You know, there is no one who is capable of questioning it.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, there's a little bit to it as well.
It's the kind of episode that I think if this was your first episode of Star Trek would mean a lot less, actually, because you wouldn't know how much is off.
No, I think that's true. Yeah, I think that if you watch this episode, I think it would be perfectly entertaining if you had never seen the show before. But there definitely is a lot of added resonance to it that you get if you've been watching the show for 4.5 years. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think also, you know, it's funny because, you know, it's very satisfying to see them sort of figure out the mystery even as they're not figuring out the mystery. You know, and I think that's kind of what the fun of the episode is. You know, you get this character, Kyle, or is his name Kieran? I don't know, whatever the fuck his name is. You get him and he sort of is obviously the unstable element in this mix. And he is the one that's egging everybody on to do what he wants them to do. And at the same time, everyone is sort of not really sure that that's what's the right thing to
do.
And I liked that because it gives an element to the episode of instability. Like, we don't know where this is going to go.
Well, yeah. I mean, they tell... Worf is another perfect example of this because he basically suggests to Worf that they mutiny and Worf doesn't say no. And
yeah,
it really isn't... you know, and we did see him, you know, take power a few minutes ago, you know, a little while ago, but it isn't until he orders him, you know, to disobey and fire, you know, it's up to that point. Worf very well could have, but no, Worf is the kind of person who's not going to mutiny against his captain. Just... for the hell of it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you see that, you know, like we talked about before with the scene with Worf and Picard as well.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, the really the one.
But again, these people are the same, even if they don't have their memory.
Right. And so that kind of leads me to the one problem I do have with the episode is that I never really understand exactly how many memories they lost because they talk about how they lost all their long-term memories. And so the implication is that they've lost all sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
They have the complete and total amnesia about who they are, where they came from, their family, you know, where they grew up, where they've lived, you know, what this situation is.
Yeah.
But it also seems like they've kept their... It's a very selective sort of memory wipe because they say that they still have all their skills, but skills are learned. I mean, those are memories in a sense.
Yeah.
And so they're able to keep those, but they don't know anything about Starfleet. They don't know anything about the Federation. You know, they don't know anything about the ship that they're on or the crew or the uniforms. Riker knows that they're on the bridge and they know they're on a starship, but it's, you know, I guess it's just because you need a way to get into the episode. You can't really consider that to be too much of a problem, I guess.
Think it's, yeah, then the memory wipe is supposed to be whatever is inconvenient. Like, this is very much a, you know, plot-guided amnesia that they get. You know, they basically, you know, it. They do need them to steer the ship in order to destroy, and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I didn't have any problems with that just because I can... The episode allowed me to conceive of an alien race that has a technology that is capable of doing this kind of surgical pinpointing, you know? And if it's something that's ridiculously beyond our technology, and again, the problem that I had is if they could develop something that great, but they can't get a better gun, but, you know... Like, why not just start using that on the Lasian ships or whatever the hell they called?
Well, yeah, I think but that's, you know.
But again, it's the kind of thing where, you know, this is us after the fact questioning this and not coming up with answers. But, you know, the answer to all of those is, well, because the show wouldn't have worked if it didn't. And didn't you have a good time watching it?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I guess, you know, the one thing I do want to ask you is what you thought of the very end of the episode. Because, of course, they're willing to go along with this as far as it goes, and they're willing to even fire on one of the ships and destroy one of them, and it said they had like 50 people on it or something.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously I don't think we're supposed to, you know, it's fairly obvious to me that Picard and everybody else is sort of uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. But once they get to the command center, and once it's very obvious that this thing is, you know, a century behind them in technology.
Yeah, they don't even seem to have any defenses.
Yeah, there's no defenses. There's 15,000 people on the thing.
Yeah.
And they decide not to do it. Did that work for you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the episode, it's a very subtly within the episode, but it's, you know, when Kyle or Kieran or whatever is talking to Picard and, you know, he says, yeah, I know, I'm uncomfortable too about this, but, you know, we've gotten these orders from other people and they've thought about it, you know, and, you know, are our moral qualms really worth that of, you know, thousands of lives will be at stake if, you know, this war can, you know, and those kind of things. I think the episode does to a degree suggest that there is some machinery of chain of command that sometimes just gets blindly followed. And one of the reasons, you know, this show has made it clear that there are times when it is morally right to disobey an order from authority.
Sure.
And I think for the first couple ships that they fire on, they are kind of going on it, and they're getting closer and closer at different rates to that breaking point where they can't do this. Troy gets it right away. Picard takes a little longer, but, you know, even Worf gets to the point when he realizes, like, no, we're going too far on this. This is not, or it's morally wrong to obey these orders.
Yeah, and I also think I agree with you, and I think it also completely makes sense, because at the end of the day, once they, you know, they could justify this in any certain way, right?
Yeah.
These are scout ships. Maybe they're not as heavily armed as the battleships, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But once they get to the thing that they're told is the linchpin of this race's efforts against them, it's this command center, and it should be as well protected as anything that they have, and they get there, and it's basically not. That's when it really I think that's when it really hits them that this is not the right thing to do, and this is not the right situation. Do you think that getting out of the amnesia was too easy, though? Like, because it kind of doesn't really get resolved. It just sort of magically gets fixed.
Eh, it doesn't really.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it,
you know,
too.
Something, I mean, Dr. Crusher can fix anything.
But she couldn't, because when the guy was on the table and he was like, ah, it hurts. And, you know.
Yeah, so when the alien spy is pretending to that the thing isn't working, you're right, she's not, she can't, no.
Like, what are you talking about? That's Commander Kyle. He's been on the show for 4.5 years. That's what the computer says.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is.
What is the point?
The point is nothing.
That was very profound.
Thank you.
You're amazing.
I am pretty all right. I wouldn't go that far, but, you know.
All right. I'll give this one 6 memory engrams.
I would give them 8.
Okay.
I rather liked this one.
Good. Well, next week we are talking about power play and ethics.
Oh, God. Stay tuned for the Trek About Lecture on Ethics.